Good morning.
Good morning.
Please rise, whether in body or in spirit, and let's join together in singing an opening hymn, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. It's number 361 in the Gray Hymnal, and I think the words are going to be on the screen. Welcome to WUF, the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. My name is Kim Transier, she, and it is my joy to be your lay leader today. Whoever and wherever you are at this moment, you're welcome here. Whatever season of age or wellness or mood you find yourself in at this moment, whatever your gender, skin color, birthplace, whatever your spiritual practices, if any, welcome to WUF. I want to especially welcome the newcomers among us, both here in person and watching online. Everyone who's here in person, whether in the sanctuary or downstairs in the coffee room, I'd like you to take a minute now to reach out to each other, say hi, and especially look for people you don't already know well. Please do continue those conversations at coffee hour after the service. We'll be out on the patio, and it's a beautiful day. Oh, and if you're watching from home, there is a virtual coffee hour, and the link to that is to be found in the email that brought you your order of service. Today's service has been created by the women's group of WUF, and now members of the women's group, Merity McDaniel and Tita Lyons, will light the chalice.
With love for mothers and foremothers, we kindle this flame of with love for mothers and foremothers past, present, and future. We kindle the flame in celebration of community and its generations. We kindle this flame with respect and support for the greater circle of life of which we are all part. And this is from written by Selena Fox. And if you would join us in our affirmation.
Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
The service today is about women,
the stages of our lives, and who appear to be under attack by forces denying them the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the guise of protecting the unborn. While we are not here to talk about the thorny issue of abortion, we do want to emphasize that women are more than vessels of reproduction. As someone has famously said, women hold up half the sky. We are not just the mothers of famous and successful people. We are the famous and successful people who belong not just in the House, but in the Senate. We honor and extol the women who, over the centuries, have made enormous contributions and sacrifices, from Cleopatra and Joan of Arc to Clara Barton, Susan B. Anthony, Marie Curie, Emily Dickinson, Mary Cassatt, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Liz Cheney, to mention but a few. We are beholden to them all, for as Madeleine Albright said, there is a special place in hell for women who do not support other women.
Thank you, Nancy. Let's see. That brings us to our first video.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. What will be, when I grew up and fell in love, I asked my sweetheart, what lies ahead? Will we have rainbows day after day? Here's what my sweetheart said. What will be, now I have children of my own, they ask their mother, what will I be, will I be handsome, will I be rich, I tell them tenderly.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Molly Devine, and I'm here with a brief introduction for this morning's service. Today's service was formed at the Women's Gathering, which is a WOOF activity open to all women in the fellowship on a drop-in basis. It meets here on the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month at 10 o'clock. In today's service, we have taken a slightly more creative format than what you may be familiar with. You will recognize some of the traditional elements, but we will be presenting the arc of a woman's life, maiden, mother, crone, in short, interactive segments. Fear not, we have planned a lively but not lengthy introduction to this concept. Maiden, mother, and crone is considered to be a neo-pagan concept in that it doesn't have ancient pagan roots, but has evolved in the recent past. It is a new creative synthesis of aspects of the past combined with contemporary insight and experience. It is also known as the concept of the triple goddess. These three manifestations of womanhood are also thought to correspond to the phases of the moon, the waxing, the full, and the waning phases. In modern Wicca and many pagan religions, the maiden is seen as the virginal young woman or girl who is not yet awakened. She is all about enchantment and new beginnings and youthful ideas and enthusiasm. She's associated with the waxing phase of the lunar cycle as the moon grows from dark to full. The mother is the next phase in a woman's life. At this stage is about fertility, abundance, and growth, the gaining of knowledge. She is the fulfillment, sexual, social, and emotional, and she is represented by the full moon, which we just recently experienced. Springtime and early summer are her domain. As the earth becomes green and fertile, so does the mother. However, it is important to note that a woman does not have to have biological children to embrace the role of mother. There are many ways to care for others. Motherhood is not limited to physical birth or nurturing, but rather symbolizes creativity in a larger sense, including giving birth to ideas. Finally, the crone aspect is the final phase. Sometimes she is depicted as a hag, the darkness of night, and eventually death. She is the waning moon, the chill of winter, the dying of the earth. However, to me, to be a crone is to become a woman of wisdom. We have endured. We have survived. We are now a source of strength, support, and hope. And we have encapsulated each of these earlier phases into who we are now. And we'll begin with the maiden.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Riles. Today in the tale of the arc of a woman's life, I get to talk about the earliest, the maiden time. I will begin with a few favorite lines from The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, where the prophet is asked to talk about childhood. It goes like this: "Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams." So in the language of poetry, maidens live in the house of tomorrow. If we move to the language of social science, we find that maidens are busy stepping through 6 out of 8 of social psychologist Erik Erikson's developmental stages. Lifetime development is heavily front-loaded. An infant maiden to age 1 is developing trust, faith in the environment and future events. In year 2, a little maiden is developing autonomy, a sense of self-control and adequacy. In years 3 through 5, growing maidens are developing initiative, the ability to start one's own activities. In years 6 to puberty, young maidens are developing industry, learning how things work, organizing and mastering things. In adolescence, maidens polish their identity, finding themselves as unique and integrated persons. Finally, in early adulthood, maidens are working on intimacy, the ability to love and commit. In my opinion, Mother Nature expects a great towering deal from young people. Just when they hardly know themselves, many still a bit clumsy, even though they might be really enjoying all the fun things and experiences around them and partying happily with each other at the pinnacle of their beauty and strength, just then, so preoccupied but fumbling a bit, They are also supposed to choose work for a lifetime and a partner in love that can last through life. How crazy is that? Is it any wonder that people change careers and partners, some more than once? As for me, I managed to work in the same field throughout my career, but I am a person who divorced while raising two small children. It felt like a terrible wrenching to turn away from one path and go back to find another. As the oldest of 10 children, I think maybe I didn't master some of my maiden stages in all the commotion. Fortunately, here at WUF, I found a second husband, John Riles. He was a great stepfather, and we've been together for 35 years now. Our daughter, Amy, a maiden of 5 when John and I met, is now 41, mother to 2 daughters of her own. Amy was a wonder for me to watch and help through the maiden years, admiring her big brother, always wanting a lot of mama, feisty in her teens, and determined from age 12 to be an artist. Now I watch and help her little maidens, Fiona 8 and Margot 4, my granddaughters, as they gain mastery in the world and their identities take shape. They are competent little maidens. But as Gibran said, I can't imagine the house of tomorrow. The best we can do is to invest love now and educate them and trust that even if they take some missteps later, they too will be able to correct course. The maiden phase is lovely and dramatic and awfully challenging in the midst of its appeal and beauty, but it is brief. Most of the years of our lives, if we are lucky, we will spend more independently in middle age and old age, working hard, maybe correcting missteps, looking for rest, and still growing. About those longer phases of a woman's life, we will soon hear from Janet Liu and Molly Devine.
Talking stand up straighter when you walk a play. morning.
Good morning.
I'm Janet Liu. I'm the mother of a young woman in her 30s. She is my only child. Let me tell my story, mother love. I had my daughter Missy when I was in my 30s. She was a very much wanted child. I was established in my career and financially secure. I stayed home with her for about 2 months and then went back to work, part-time at first, then full-time. I was happier having outside work than being a full-time mom. My daughter was a happy child and adjusted well to being cared for by others. She waved goodbye to me from her preschool's front window in the mornings. She told me that she did not like to be the last child to be picked up at school. She wasn't, most of the time. I worked in finance and had managers who valued me and gave me flexibility in being a mom. My coworkers knew that I needed to leave about 5 p.m. to pick up Missy from daycare. Later, I worked out a telecommute arrangement so that I can work from home. It started with 2 days a month, then it gradually increased to 1 day a week, then 2 days a week. It may all now seem like no big deal, but 25 years ago, I was the only one at my company to work from home. When Missy was 4 years old, she wanted to tell me something. She said if she raised one finger, it meant hi. If she raised two fingers, it meant you're nice. If she raised three fingers, it meant I love you. I realized that whenever her father came into the room and saw the two of us sitting close together or having a good time, he would scowl and yell something unpleasant. So Missy had invented the finger signals to express her love. Even today, Missy and I say goodbye with our three-finger signal. When she was 12, I divorced my husband because I was unhappy in my marriage. I also believed that he would kill me in his next violent explosion. Being a single parent has been easier than I thought. I was very lucky that Missy and I were compatible. She was aligned with my value of education and being independent and responsible. We had disagreements, but not over those values. My mother had also been a single parent, and I saw how tough it was for parent alone. But my mother had done it. Even when she was not fluent in English, when she had little money, and she had two children. Another value that Missy and I shared was our love of food. One food she loved was spring rolls. It's a big effort to make, but often on weekends, we would prepare the filling, then assemble the rolls by putting the filling onto a spring roll skin, adding fresh bean sprouts, and then close the wrap into a roll. She had the final job of brushing the rolls with oil before we baked them. We ate them with rice congee. We bonded so happily, making and eating that meal. I recently asked Missy how it has been as a daughter. She said she felt cherished, that when we talk, I fully listen, that I genuinely want to connect, and that I ask probing questions. I've been a good mom. I'm glad that she is creating her life to be happy. She was trained and then practiced as a dentist for some 5 years. Then she decided that she wasn't happy with that work. So now she's back in school in Boston, training to be an orthodontist. So far, she says she is happy with her choice. While she has grown stronger over time, I have declined physically and mentally, especially in the last 6 years. I tell her my health problems. She's sad and encourages me to do more stretches for my joints and to play the piano more slowly because of my deteriorating piano playing. I feel that our roles have changed. She is now doing more of the listening. Loving my daughter has changed me in many ways. I think the most important is that I've been opened up and transformed to love someone deeply and unconditionally. Caring for her well-being has opened up me to ask for and to do things I would have been reluctant to undertake. I have become a stronger and a more caring person.
After a while, I learned the subtle difference between holding a hand and chaining a soul. And I learned love doesn't mean leaning, and company doesn't mean security. And I begin to learn kisses aren't contracts, and presents aren't promises. And I begin to accept my defeats with my head up and my eyes open, with the grace of a woman, not the grief of a child. I learn to build all my roads on today, because tomorrow's ground is too uncertain for plans, and futures have a way of falling down in mid-flight. After a while, I learn that even sunshine burns if I get too much. So I'll plant my own garden and decorate my own soul instead of waiting for someone to bring me flowers. And I learn that I really can endure, that I really am strong, and I learn really do have worth. And I learn and learn with every goodbye, I learn.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Shapiro. I'm going to fix this guy a little bit. I first of all, I want to say thank you for all the work that went into this. It's surprising how it touches me and just in unexpected ways. So thank you for putting this together, Molly. So this poem that I'm going to read is called Warning. It was written by British author Jenny Joseph. And in a 1996 survey, BBC identified this poem as the UK's most popular post-war one, beating Dylan Thomas's Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night. She composed Warning at age 29 and continued writing throughout her adult life. But this one poem has defined her, despite a large and rich body of work. Warning. When I am an old woman, I shall wear purple, with a red hat which doesn't go and doesn't suit me, and I shall spend my pension on brandy and summer gloves and satin sandals and say we've no money for butter. I shall sit down on the pavement when I'm tired and gobble up samples in shops and press alarm bells and run my stick along the public railings and make up for the sobriety of my youth. I shall go out in my slippers in the rain and pick the flowers in other people's gardens and learn to spit. You can wear terrible shirts and grow more fat and eat 3 pounds of sausages at a go, or only bread and pickle for a week and hoard pens and pencils and beer mats and things in boxes. But now we must have clothes that keep us dry and pay our rent and not swear in the street, and set a good example for the children. We must have friends to dinner and read the papers. but maybe I ought to practice a little now, so people who know me are not too shocked and surprised when suddenly I am old and start to wear purple. Thank you.
Hello, Molly again. And I get to talk about the crone, and I must admit, it's a wonderful stage of life. An old woman, what can or would you want to know about the life of an old woman? Babies and young girls and maidens are seen for the promise of what their lives may hold. They are fresh, mostly unblemished, unguarded, have not yet been taught to refrain, withhold, be cautious or fearful about their futures. In our contemporary culture, they are more given to more encouragement about the possibilities of their futures than in many other places in the world or other periods of time. The future is full of promise. Mature women, many times mothers, are at the stage of their lives often the pillars of the lives of others. They nurture, they work, both for pay and much of the time without compensation. So much of this stage of life is lived in relationship to others. In this period, women are often seen as daughters, wives, mothers, sisters, employees, or even bosses. This is frequently a time of great demands and responsibilities, and of corresponding great fatigue. I would like to offer up to you the idea of the crone as outlined by Jean Shinoda Boland's Crones Don't Whine, Concentrated Wisdom for Juicy Women. I would like to see the word crone repurposed to become a crowning inner achievement of the third phase of a woman's life. To be a crone is about inner development, not outer appearance. A crone is a woman who has wisdom, compassion, humor, courage, and vitality. She has a sense of truly being herself. She can express what she knows and she feels and take action when need be. She does not avert her eyes or numb her mind from reality. She can see flaws and imperfections in herself and others, but the light in which she sees them is not hard and judgmental. She has learned to trust herself to know what she knows. In Boland's words, this time, our prime years, can be a especially rich time to enjoy who we are, what we have, and what we are doing. It is a time when wisdom calls upon us to use our time, energy, and vitality well. It is an opportunity to have more chances, to experience shifts in roles, and develop talents and interest. It may be a time to play and express affection, or a time for creativity or sensuality, or a time for meditation or therapy, or a time for a family, or a time when family recedes, or a time to make a difference in the world. I proudly claim the word crone. I feel I've earned it. I've learned, I've unlearned, and I've relearned so many life lessons. I have worked hard and consistently to help build the world I wish my grandchildren to inherit. I know living this long, well into my eighth decade of life, that it is a privilege to be healthy, to have assets, and reasonable mental capabilities. With these great privileges, I feel I still have responsibilities to myself, to my loved ones, and to the world. I have taken to heart these four guiding principles for living each day as a crone. 1, show up. Very simple in theory, harder sometimes in practice. But one of the things I can say I am personally most proud of is show up. 2, pay attention. So many times I think we enter into any kind of relationship with others and We have a frame of mind, but it's really valuable to take that breath and to pay attention to what is happening around you, what others are feeling, to be responsive. 3, speak my truth. Oh, it's a hard one. Sometimes it means speaking out loud. Sometimes it means taking an action. Sometimes it means biting my tongue and not saying it. But to know what my truth is important. And 4, it's learning. I have learned to pray for the best outcome. I believe we are all interconnected, much as our Unitarian principles say. And by praying for the best outcome, I hope that I am extending personal energy into the world, into the universe, even though I don't know where that might lead. I think it's really important to be part of that connectedness. Crohn's can make a difference, and aging well is a goal worth wanting. Quite unintentionally, I'm sensing a very strong connection between this week's message and those of recent services by Rosie Hamilton on beginnings and endings, and that of Salemas on old age is not for sissies. This salty old woman, this divine older lady, this crone concludes in gratitude for being able to share my thoughts on crone.
We are the women giving birth to tomorrow. We are the women who are present today. We are the women who know hope and sorrow. Women who act, women who pray, women whose wisdom will light the way. We are the women giving birth to tomorrow. We are the women who are present today. We are the women who know hope and sorrow. Women who work, women who play, women whose wisdom will light the way. We are the women giving birth to tomorrow. We are the women who are present today. We are the women who know hope and sorrow. Women who fear, women who dare, women whose wisdom will light the way. We are the women birth to tomorrow. We are the women who are present today. We are the women who know hope and sorrow. Women who laugh, women who grieve, women whose wisdom will light the way. We are the women giving birth to tomorrow. We are the women who are present today. We are the women who know hope and sorrow. Women who ache, women who heal, women whose wisdom will light the way.
I feel called to announce that I'm wearing purple socks. I've been thinking it's not only that you go through cycles of sprouting and then fruitfulness and then spreading seeds as a life course, one-time thing, but that it seems to me I go through cycles of all of those things many times in life. And so with regard to woof, I've found like there are seasons or even years when I'm just tiny and tender and I need woof to feed and water me. But then there are other times when I have more to give and I'm you know, fruitful and doing stuff. I think probably everybody who's with woof for a long time has noticed that kind of rhythm. So during the musical interlude that follows, please consider the gifts you have to offer woof if this is one of those seasons where you feel like you have them. Whether it be the gift of your volunteer time or a financial offering, we're grateful for your gifts. Join me, please, in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. Now the women's group will give us our closing words and a final song, which is not Carry the Flame, so don't be confused. And after the service, let's all go downstairs and have coffee hour out on the patio. And there may be a 2-minute action from the social justice team. Look for the social justice table. I'm not sure if it's happening today or not, but keep an eye out for it in the coffee room. Merity and Tita.
We extinguish this flame with love for mothers and foremothers, past, present, and future. We extinguish this flame in celebration of community and its generations. We extinguish this flame with respect and support for the greater circle of life of which we are all part.
Numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Oh yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. If I pay the price, I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. I am invincible. I am one. You can bend but never break me, 'cause it only serves to make me more determined to achieve my stronger, not an novice any longer, 'cause you deepen the conviction in my soul. Oh yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. If I pay the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. I am woman, watch me grow.